morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much on this bright and early Monday morning. We have, it looks like, four bills that are set for public hearing and possible work sessions. We do have a request by the guy who always wants to go first, Paul Romaine, that we take up House Bill 2619 because he has other appointments. Who else in the room has other appointments? Okay, that's what I was afraid of. So we'll go ahead and call a public hearing on House Bill 2619. Josh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2619 addresses pawnbrokers. The bill allows a pawnbroker and a borrower to agree that a notice indicating certain pawn property is at risk of forfeiture may be transmitted by electronic means instead of regular mail.
Mr. Romaine.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm representing the Oregon Pawnbrokers Association. I'm reluctant to ever say that a pawn bill is a simple bill because 2 years ago I said something like that and it dealt with guns and it was not a simple bill. But this one is a simple bill. Pawnbrokers are highly regulated entry-level banks, basically. And almost everything we do is either in rule or in statute. And sometimes you need to change the statute to conform with modern times. What this bill does, really the operative language, is on line 23 to 25 of the first page of the bill, and it says that at the time the pawnbroker makes or renews the loan, the pledger may agree in writing to receive the notice described in subsection 3 of this section by electronic mail or other electronic means instead of regular mail. What happens is that today a lot of people who use pawn shops don't either get their mail or don't want to look at their mail, but what this does is it gives that person who's pawning something the option of choosing the way they want to be notified that the loan is due and that they have a certain amount of time before the item is potentially forfeited. It's the total choice of the pledgor, not the pawn shop, and it just brings stuff into modern times. And it can be by text message, it can be by email. They could designate both if they want. But the bottom line is it gives the person pledging the item the opportunity to choose the way that they want to be notified. That's all the bill does. We'd appreciate your support. Be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Paul? All right, I think you might be off the hook. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on House Bill 2619? It looks like Arthur Towers is thinking about it, just stretching his legs, though. All right, so we'll close the public hearing, and I assume we have everything ready to go. So we're going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2619. And
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2619 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2619 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And
okay.
Senator Thatcher will be our carrier. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2619. And we're going to go back up to the top unless we have other special orders here. No other special orders. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2307. You bet.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2307 addresses the relationship between guilty except for insanity evaluations and aid and assist evaluations. The bill provides that a certified examiner conducting an insanity evaluation need not evaluate the defendant's ability to aid and assist unless the defendant's ability to do so is drawn into question during the evaluation.
And Mickey?
Yes.
Please go ahead and go forward.
Thank you. Senator Pozanski, members of the committee, I am Mickey Logan. I'm the Legal Affairs Director at the Oregon State Hospital. I am here to support House Bill 2307, which, as Mr. Nasby explained, it clarifies that a full competency evaluation, which is also called a fitness to proceed or a 370 evaluation, is not needed in order to conduct an evaluation for guilty except for insanity, which we refer to as GEI. When someone pleads guilty except for insanity, it means they claim they were suffering from mental illness at the time of their crime, at that time. In many cases, that's a short period of incoherence, and then it's followed by restored lucidity. Many attorneys and judges erroneously believe that a full competency evaluation is necessary to conduct a GEI evaluation. Therefore, they're asking our forensic evaluation service at the state hospital to do a lot more than in their orders than is actually necessary. A competency evaluation and a GEI evaluation are actually very different. GEI evaluations assess whether the person was too mentally ill at the time they committed the crime to understand the consequences of their actions. Competency evaluations, on the other hand, assess if the defendant is able or not able to assist in their own defense at the time of the trial. House Bill 2307 is consistent with clinical and forensic standards for certified evaluators who are trained to not proceed with the GEI evaluation if the defendant's competency to aid and assist comes into question while they're doing the GEI evaluation. Oregon State Hospital and the Oregon Health Authority support this bill and request your support as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Senator Lethicombe.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, competency is related more to the ability to comprehend and defend oneself versus at the time of the crime, understanding the, I guess, fill in that blank, understanding.
Senator Przanski, Senator Lethicombe, what a... at the time of the crime, the evaluators are looking at, did they have the requisite mental state to understand that their behavior wasn't legal? So did they were they able to conform their behavior at the time of the crime to what we would expect someone to do? If the mental illness caused them to commit the crime and they didn't understand it was a crime, then they can plead guilty except for insanity. And that's a totally different assessment because you're assessing what was happening at the time of the crime, whereas, as you say, at the for a competency evaluation, you're actually assessing where they are right here, right now, today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Any other questions? Mickey, thank you very much. Why don't you just stay where you're at, and let me see if there's anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2307. Not seeing any, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2307. I assume we have paperwork. We're open for work session on House Bill 2307. And Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2307 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2307 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And I'm going to assign Senator Manning to carry the bill. And Senator Manning should be shown as excused from the votes today on both the first one we had and this one and subsequent for today if he's not in. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2307, and we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2309A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2309A addresses defendants who are treated for the inability to aid and assist. The bill provides that treatment progress reports submitted to the court may consist of an update to an earlier examination.
All right, thank you. And Mickey?
Yes, thank you. Senator Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Mickey Logan. I'm the Legal Affairs Director at the Oregon State Hospital. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2309A, which allows evaluators to avoid unnecessary rework when they reevaluate OSH, Oregon State Hospital, patients who are under aid and assist orders, which are also referred to as 370 orders. The 370 refers to the statute. The high numbers of patients under aid and assist orders at OSH, as you may know, continues to be quite problematic. Under the current statutes and rules, evaluators must draft comprehensive evaluations every time they assess a patient. This includes an entire medical history, regardless of whether the evaluation is a preliminary evaluation or a follow-up re-evaluation. This rework takes up a great deal of time and resources for our hospital evaluators who serve defendants from throughout the state. Their time could be better spent evaluating patients whose treatment teams have indicated they are ready to leave the hospital. Moreover, we have a limited number of forensically certified evaluators at Oregon State Hospital, and they all have an extremely high workload. In 2016, OSH's forensic evaluators signed 1,346 evaluations. The forensic evaluation service at the state hospital filed an average of 5.36 court-ordered evaluations every business day. Each full-time evaluator at the state hospital conducts an average of 3 aid and assist evaluations per week, or they do 1 aid and assist evaluation and 1 criminal responsibility or GEI evaluation per week. This is a pretty high, it's a reasonable workload, but it's pretty high in comparison to other state forensic evaluation services throughout the country. House Bill 2309 amends ORS 161370 so that only the first evaluation must include the full medical history and thorough evaluation. The subsequent 370 evaluations may be progress reports. Note that this change also would significantly reduce unnecessary paperwork. The Oregon State Hospital and the Oregon Health Authority support this bill, and we request your support as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions? All right, I do want to just make sure we have stuff on the record. I know there's been some concerns from the local communities and in way of prosecution of cases, stuff that happens at the misdemeanor level and individuals being referred for psyche eval. And I understand that there's been some discussions or maybe some positions by the Oregon Health Authority as to whether they are appropriate to be at the state hospital for evaluation. I just want to make certain that what we're talking about today has nothing to do with those concepts, but what we're talking about is where someone is actually in the Oregon State Hospital, that once the original report is filed, then any updates does not require the legwork, paperwork of recreating the medical history, et cetera. It's just going to be supplemental reports to the current condition of the status reports, I guess is the best way to say. Is that correct?
Senator Przanski, that's correct. This doesn't speak at all to the misdemeanor issue.
Okay.
And we're not trying to hide anything here. This is pretty straightforward.
I didn't say you were. I just want to make sure it's on the record because, you know, if it's something that's going to be impacted that way, then I'd like to have a broader discussion on that. And so since it doesn't, you know, then we won't need to have that discussion with this bill.
Oh, I appreciate that. When I testified in support of this bill on the other side, of the on the House side, the other people who testified in support of it included the AG's office and such. So there isn't any, to my knowledge, opposition to the bill.
Okay. Any questions based on that? All right. Mickey, thank you very much. And do we have anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2309A? Not seeing anyone. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. Open up a work session on House Bill 2309A.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2309A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Thatcher moves 2309A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered. And we'll have Senator Manning carry this since it will be kind of a companion to 2307. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2309A. And we do have one more bill to hear. I'm going to go ahead and open it up. I know we got, looks like Representative Langinger is supposed to be here, and possibly Senator Taylor are supposed to be here. They are not here now. I understand that Langinger reported that she would not be able to be here till 9 o'clock. So let me see who else is here, and maybe we will, I assume people don't want to just stop the show here. So we have 4 other people that are scheduled to give testimony, and I think what we're going to go ahead and do is start on that since everyone's here. So let's go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2972A. Josh?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2972A prohibits universities and community colleges from using discipline or the threat of discipline to influence the decision of a victim to report or participate in an investigation or adjudication of sexual assault, domestic violence, or stalking.
All right, so as I'm talking slow, trying to make certain those who might be in their rooms can actually get down here.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking for testimony over on the House side. I could read one of the,
Well, why don't we do this? I think some of the individuals are here. So I've got Jackie Sandmeyer, Melissa Earlbaum, and then also Sybil Hebb and Arthur Towers. So Since y'all were on the other side, meaning on the House side on this, which of the four of you should be leading off, or should we? All right. Why don't you go ahead and come on up? Seems like you've been
thank you.
Appointed.
Unvoluntarily.
All right.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Jackie Sandmeyer. I'm the campus coordinator for the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2972 as it promotes what we know to be best practice on college campuses across Oregon. In my role at the Oregon Sexual Assault Task Force, I provide training and technical assistance to all public, private, two-year, and four-year institutions here in Oregon. And through this work, we strive to find the sometimes delicate balance between federally mandated compliance with Title IX and Cleary, as well as victim-centered and trauma-informed best practices that serve our students best. 1 in 5 women will experience sexual violence while they're enrolled in a college or university here in the state of Oregon. Additionally, our students of marginalized populations, such as LGBT students and students of color, will experience rates of violence in college unparalleled by their peers. Title IX asks that colleges investigate all known instances of sexual harassment, which when we look to case law has expanded itself in the courts to be interpreted to include sexual violence, dating violence, domestic violence, and stalking. This call to investigate and adjudicate complaints on campuses is to be weighed with a student victim's right to confidentiality and at times a request that the case not move forward with the investigation. Students often identify embarrassment, fear of retaliation, and most of all, fear of the unknown of the Title IX process as reasons for not wanting to come forward after an assault and seek out services. We know that if students are given confidential options and empowered to make decisions about how to move forward, students are, one, more likely to reach out for support services, and it's also shown that students are more likely to move forward with an investigation. Since the implementation of House Bill 3476, allowing for privilege advocates on campuses in Oregon for the first time, giving students an option to engage in a form of confidential options, we've actually seen in an implementation, which is approximately a year now on our campuses, a 120% increase in students deciding to report and a 138% increase in students who are accessing services on their campuses. To risk any student fearing that their institution may sanction them or threaten them to take action against them after reporting an assault goes against what we know to be best practice. Oregon is considered the model in the country for some of the best victim-centered Title IX compliant programs and practices in the nation, and this bill should be no different. Much of what we have to thank for the Oregon Department of Justice, as well as the Attorney General's Office, and most of all this legislature, for continuing to pass forward legislation that furthers this purpose here in Oregon. I urge the passage of House Bill 2972 to help Oregon take yet another step toward trauma-informed best practices, and most of all toward ensuring that our students will always be met with a compassionate post-disclosure of an assault. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thanks, Jackie. Any questions for Jackie? All right. Why don't we – I will go ahead and ask you this one question. I'm just glancing at the amendment, the dash ones. I see that it only had – just a change in word, or not a change of word, but I guess included or imposition. So in the context of that, that was to cover what? And essentially it says threat or imposition.
Chair Przanski, the question when it originally went to hearing was whether or not it covered threat as well as a sanction, and the language was unclear. So the amended language is more clear as to the fact that not only a sanction against a student for not participating in the process, but also a threat of implying a sanction to a student.
Yeah. Well, thank you for answering that question. We were just trying to make certain we got certain individuals in the room. And as happens, we now have both of the other individuals in. So, Jackie, thank you for helping us get to this point. Thank you. So we have Representative Langinger and Senator Taylor who are going to be assisting in the presentation here. Please be aware that we've already started this hearing and we already have testimony, so we kind of know what's happening to some point.
Okay. So I apologize for being so late. Chair Przanski, you can blame.
Yeah, we're early.
You're actually early because we heard you weren't going to be here till 9, so we've been kind of delaying ourselves.
I was just trying to do the people's work of generating revenue for the great state of Oregon, so we're in revenue, but regardless. So Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21. Thank you for having this hearing today on House Bill 2972A, a bill that I truly wish was not necessary. House Bill 2972 will help to support student survivors of sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and stalking who are in the aftermath of a traumatic event and are making a difficult decision about if, when, and to what entity to report their assault. This bill simply states that a college or university cannot use the threat of discipline or sanction to influence a student's decision about their choice to report. We know college students to be especially vulnerable to sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and stalking, which are traumatizing experiences and can be very difficult to move forward from. When a powerful institution like a college or university attempts to influence a survivor's decision through threats, it can be re-traumatizing for the survivor who is working to gain back a sense of control. By allowing these threats to take place, we support perpetrators as opposed to the needs of victims. In passing House Bill 2972A, we send the important message to perpetrators and their decision to commit these crimes is unacceptable. I very much want to thank Representative Leidinger for introducing this bill, and I want to acknowledge the hard work of the Attorney General's office. I know there are experts who, it sounds like you've already heard from some, to answer questions and speak about survivors' needs. And I just want to urge your I vote in support of this bill, please.
Thank you.
Hi. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Ann Leininger from House District 38, which is Lake Oswego and Southwest Portland. I am delighted to be here in support of this important piece of legislation that, that for good reasons, has bipartisan support in the House and bipartisan support in the Senate, and will take the important step of making sure that survivors of sexual assault, domestic violence, and stalking on college campuses get to make their own independent decisions about whether to come forward and participate in university college-based disciplinary proceedings. And I think that that, as Senator Taylor mentioned, is consistent with our understanding that helping survivors reclaim the sense of self-determination that can be lost in an assault or some other kind of violent situation is really important. This is a bill that was developed with strong leadership from the Attorney General and from Aaron Knott in the Department of Justice, and there's a great team of advocates here who can lend to the understanding of context. But one thing that really moved me as I was preparing for this bill and this hearing and in general bringing forward the concept was to read about the fact that in college campuses around the country there have been a lot of incidents in which student survivors were threatened with discipline if they chose to go forward or if they chose not to go forward with claims, and I think sends absolutely the wrong set of messages. And though no Oregon college or university that we are aware of has taken one of those problematic steps by codifying this prohibition in Oregon law, we can help ensure that Oregon colleges and universities support an approach to survivors that is consistent with what we understand to be good practice of helping people reclaim their dignity and their autonomy and self-determination. So thanks so much for your consideration today. We urge you to support this bill.
Thank you. Questions for the Senator or the Representative? Senator Thatcher.
Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing this forward. You mentioned there were problems at other universities in other states. Have there been problems since the passage of the bill last session? I don't remember the number, but have there been problems with sanctions being threatened in Oregon, against people in Oregon colleges?
So I must have spoken less clearly than I intended. We are not aware of any problems in Oregon colleges, but there have been really shocking and dismaying problems in other states. And so this bill is an attempt to codify and make sure that our colleges and universities never go down that road, which seems so traumatizing and problematic.
Okay, so it's codifying current practice. They're not violating this, but we just want to make sure it continues being a good environment.
That's my understanding, that it's codifying that there is a prohibition, and in current practice, no one has, at this point, tried to use disciplinary proceedings in Oregon, but we would be asserting affirmatively that there is a prohibition against that in this context. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for putting that on the record, because I think it's very important that we establish at this point we know of none. I know Jackie's still in the room, and if that is different since she is with part of the task force, we'd ask her to come back up if there's any disagreement with what has been stated. So at this point, is there any other questions? Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day. More revenue, yes. All right. So the last panel we have scheduled at this point is Melissa, Sybil, and Arthur. Why don't y'all three come up?
Chair Prasansky, members of the committee, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here in support of House Bill 2972A. I had a chance to hear only part of the comments from the sponsors. I really want to thank all of the sponsors of the bill for their efforts here. And I would just echo to speak to Vice Chair Thatcher's question that to the Law Center, our purpose here and our most important principle is making sure that the state statute sets out this protection so that people are confident that they have the privacy and the protections and that there is not going to be sanction for any decision about whether or not to participate in a disciplinary proceeding. And from our clients who are domestic and sexual violence survivors, confidentiality is just of the utmost importance. And without that assurance, people often aren't free to make the choices that are the safest for them. And so that's why we very much appreciate the codification in statute, because it's something that's solid and it offers that assurance to people. And so that's why we appreciate the efforts of the sponsors to bring it forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Melissa?
Hi. I'm Melissa Earlbaum from Clackamas Women's Services, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2972. Chair Prasansky, Vice Chair Thatcher, and members of the committee, you've heard a lot of testimony already, so I won't go through all of the pieces in my testimony, which has been submitted in writing, but I just want to read one piece of it. As a professional who's worked in this field for over 20 years, I can tell you that survivors of sexual assault, sexual harassment, stalking, and domestic violence must have agency over how they participate and hold offenders accountable. This type of violence targets the very core of the human experience by exerting violence and abusive control over another person. This experience is incredibly traumatizing, and a key component to a survivor's recovery is their ability to determine when, if, and how to talk about an event. And I just want to say that I think Oregon has done an incredible job in our legislative body in understanding how trauma affects survivors. This piece of legislation continues down that path to serve as a leadership role to others in terms of how we respect a survivor's experience and the trauma that comes with that, and giving them some agency over how they pursue justice in their lives. So we're here in support of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Arthur?
My name is Arthur Towers, and I'm proud to be the political director for the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill and to be part of the team working to pass this legislation. As you know, our members fight for people who've been sexually assaulted. They make sure that on the civil justice side that they are compensated properly and that they get their day in court. And we feel strongly that this is a terrific bill, because in instances in which there may be culpability on the part of the institution for not keeping the student safe, we feel it's unjust for the student to be coerced into participating in the disciplinary hearing. And we submitted written testimony, so I won't go into it any further. But again, we just appreciate being part of the team. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone at the panel? Thank you all very much for giving testimony. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2972A? Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing, and we'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2972A. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2972A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2972A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Taylor will be the carrier on House Bill 2972A. We'll close the work session on 2972A. And Lisa, I believe that takes care of all of our work for today. And I believe we're scheduled to be back here at 8:30. So please note the time change. We're going back to 8:30 from 8 o'clock until we find that we need to have additional time. So with that, we're adjourned until tomorrow, 8:30. Thanks, everybody. 30. Thanks, everybody. Until tomorrow.